You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the program Local Folk. I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and as per usual, I was playing a track from the guest that I have this evening. I can't wait to introduce him, but first I have a few announcements to make. I was playing some Illan pipes earlier, among other things, and you know what that means. My guest tonight is an Illan pipe player. He's from the band Bog Hat. And he does a lot more than just perform with Boghat. They've been he was one of the founding members, or at least he was close by when they started the afternoon session at Brian Boru in Portland. And also, he's involved with the session and concert series at the Blue up in Portland, and also One Longfellow Square. So he's involved in the, he's sort of an axis mundi of folk music up in the, up in the Portland, Maine area. And it is a real pleasure to have him here today. And his name is Tom Rota. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. I'm glad to have our friends from up north. You know, head on down here.
We feel the same way when you guys come up.
Well, thank you very much. See, this is the way it should be. They're almost like, they should be like sister cities or something like that. People kind of say it about Newburyport and Portsmouth, but I don't know about that.
Yeah, you're better off with Portland, I think.
That's what I think. Hop in your car. I keep thinking to myself, you know, I grew up on Cape Cod, came all the way up to Boston. When I finally graduated college, I came up here to New Hampshire. Now I live in Kittery. I'm ready to just keep going north. You know, how about yourself? Where'd you come from?
I grew up in New Jersey.
So there you go.
Yeah, quite a bit far away, but right next to the new the George Washington Bridge in a little suburb in Milford, New Jersey. And I lived there all the way through high school, went to college in near Albany at Siena College. And after that, worked in Jersey for a while, lived in Connecticut for a while, back to Jersey, and eventually came up here after New York City for a little bit. And then saw a chance to move to Portland. I had a good friend up here playing music, and I was just starting to get into Irish music at that point, just for a few years. I'd only been playing pipes for a couple of years, and took my chance and came up and haven't looked back yet.
No kidding. So, but you said you'd only been playing pipe for a couple of years, so you're already involved in the music.
Right.
In one way or another.
I was working for an Irish record label for Green Linnet Records at the time. It was pretty much the biggest Irish record label in the country. In Connecticut for a while, and that's where I got kind of hooked on the pipes. Actually, I got really into them. I kept asking my bosses to keep an eye out for them, because they would go over to Ireland pretty regularly and do some look for bands and things like that. I said, if you ever come across a set, I had no idea what I was getting into or even asking them for, because it's hard enough to get a set, even a practice set, never mind one that plays well. And I kept asking them, and I didn't really expect much. I was playing banjo, five-string banjo at the time, and pretty good Scruggs style bluegrass player, but I was trying to play Irish music on it, and that's just a self-defeating attempt or notion. doesn't happen very well, but it's possible, but it's a lot of work. In any case, they wind up coming back and giving me for my Christmas bonus one year, my first practice set of pipes.
No kidding.
They found through a friend of theirs, yeah, through a guy named Alan O'Leary, actually, who does a great radio show podcast.
Okay.
If you haven't heard that, but he does a great, I forget what it's called. So they gave me my first practice set, and I found a teacher named Bill Ox down in New York City. Bill's taught a lot of people and teaches at the Irish Arts Center down in New York. So I would drive down to Hell's Kitchen once a week for my lessons from Danbury to there, and did that for a few years, and really didn't play a lot of sessions or with a ton of other people except for friends who were learning, like this one guy who was in Portland eventually, you know, and then just kind of learning on my own. But back then we didn't go out and just play sessions right away. We kind of listened and watched, and there was so much to listen to between the job at Green Linnet and all the concerts I saw there, and then going into New York City all the time and seeing like Don Mead used to do a great concert series there, the Blarney Star, and countless other things going on. So there was just great time to soak it all in.
So, but you know, this what year was that about? When you were Green Linnet?
That was probably around 96.
96.
When I left there, it was around then.
Okay, so, you know, when was the first... Did you grow up with folk music?
Not really. We grew up... My mom would pretty much control the music, and she used to play like a lot of Clancy Brothers and the Furies with Davy Arthur. I remember that really well. And some other Irish stuff like that. Mostly the sing-along stuff.
Is Rota an Irish name?
No, that's Italian.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like a Joyce on my mom's side. Both of her parents were from Ireland, from Galway and Roscommon. But my dad's side's all from Italy.
So I would say.
We're a little half Italian, half Irish. In Maine, that seems to be a very exotic, strange mix that people keep commenting on. Yeah. But where I come from in New Jersey, it's pretty much everybody is either Irish, Italian, or Irish and Italian. And most are half and half. So you have the best of both words. You drink like an Irishman, eat like an Italian.
People do think that's exotic up here, don't they? No, I don't know. I you know, I do so many. I'm a wedding DJ, and so I mean, I do so many of these things. So it's, I love the combos, man. Bring the combos on. But maybe it was a Jersey thing or something like that. Hey, super cool. Okay, so your mom was from Ireland, and she was playing this.
Well,
Irish,
her parents, yeah. She was born in Brooklyn, yeah.
Okay, so she was born in Brooklyn, but you know, so she was playing this stuff for you. Was it? Did you get super absorbed into it, or were you just like, ah, that's great, Ma, and then you were off listening to?
No, more like the latter there. It was, you know, it was always background in the house, but it wasn't really prevalent. And my grandfather actually played the melodeon. He was from Galway and played all the time, apparently, before I was around.
What's a melodeon?
Melodeon is a one-row button accordion. So it's just like the button accordion you see a lot of people playing, but it only has one row of buttons, and it's just like kind of like a limited accordion.
Is that like what Bob Dunleavy plays, or does he have a two?
No, Bob has a regular old two-button or two-row.
Two-row.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of standard. You can't play all the tunes on the melodeon because they have a limited scale, but it's a different sound. It's like a lot of Cajun accordion is melodeon.
Oh, is it?
And a lot of the old players, especially from Galway, there's a lot of melodeon players, or melodeon, as you would say. I know Chris Stevens, who we talked about earlier, plays a lot of melodeon here and there when he gets a chance to, you know.
I feel like I had seen maybe somebody playing it. Was it him?
Probably.
Huh. Yeah,
he does it all. He plays in a Cajun band up in Portland. He plays a lot of that there. He brings it out once in a while to the Irish sessions, but like I said, he can play all the tunes on his regular box and on the melodeon. It's a little more limited, so it's just for special occasions, I think. It's a special sound. But anyway, my grandfather played this, so I never got a chance to see him. He had stopped playing by the time I was old enough to remember, I guess. I'm the youngest of six, so I got the tail end of that whole deal. So I really picked up on it, on the Irish stuff later on at Green Linnet, by being inundated. I was sitting in the warehouse.
How the heck did you even get to work at a big Irish record label? I mean, you must have had motivation to be in the music business.
That's not a bad story, actually. Yeah, I got out of college and in 90, and I worked for a couple years. I was painting houses. I was you know, mowing lawns, doing whatever you could. It was right after the Ronald Reagan year, so the economy wasn't great back then either, if anybody remembers. And I was just doing whatever I could in Jersey, hanging out, playing a lot of music, mostly bluegrass. And I was always kind of into traditional music without knowing what that term was, but I always liked bluegrass since I was a little kid. I always liked fiddle music and whatever I got my hands on for that. So I was doing that, and I always wanted to work in music, and I didn't really know how to go about it or what I wanted to do. So I just started cold calling all of these record labels. I started sending out blind letters, and I sent it to all my favorite kind of indie labels like Rounder and Sugar Hill and you know, labels like that. And about a month before I had sent these letters out, I listened to this band Alton on a radio station.
Yeah,
it was actually
Alton.
WFUV down in out of Fordham in the Bronx. Great station. Back then it was even better. And I heard this band Alton, and they just blew me away. And it was really the first time I got really, really turned on by modern Irish music. So I sent away for the CD, and they sent me a catalog with the CD. Yeah. And when I was sending out these letters, there's the catalog on my desk. I said, I might as well send them one too. It was an afterthought.
Yeah.
And they're the only ones. I sent about probably 25 or 30 labels or letters out to different labels.
Yeah.
And they're the only ones that responded to me.
Nice.
I drove up to Danbury, and Wendy, the boss, said, well, you know, we really love your enthusiasm, but we don't have a job for you. But we're going to keep you in mind. And I said, okay, great. She gave me about 10 CDs. And I went home very excited. It was worth the trip. Yeah. And then about 6 months later, they said, now, at the time, I was running a warehouse in New Jersey just for, I forget, copier supplies or something like that. And she said, I know you have warehouse experience. We need somebody. Would you like to run our warehouse? So I said, absolutely.
Great.
And I got up. And that's pretty much just kind of weird to think of it that way, to see how where my life's gone since then, because of the music mostly. But it's kind of interesting. And I just started listening all day long in the warehouse as I was wrapping boxes up and sending CDs out. I would just go through the whole catalog. They used to joke I know the catalog better than anybody there for a little while. You know, I think it's faded nowadays. But they have some great, great old stuff. And it was really just an education, and I was getting more and more into it. And then, as I already said, eventually they gave me that set of pipes, and that really got me into playing.
Yeah.
That was near the end of when I worked there that I started taking lessons, the last year and a half or so.
Now, the pipes that they gave you were Illan pipes.
Right.
Okay.
Irish pipes.
Irish pipes. I was told it means elbow pipes.
Yeah, Illan supposedly means elbow in Irish.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
You think that's true? Okay. It might be true.
I think it's probably true, but, you know, the different pronunciations are always my favorite, but Illan is absolutely correct. Well, I'm very...
Oh, okay. Why? How else can you say
Illan, Ulian,
Ilion Willen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you want to play something for us?
Oh, sure, if you're ready for that.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm totally ready. We had another Ilion pipe player on, but it was a long time ago, and we should just explain that what it has is called elbow pipe, because there's like a bellows that you operate with your elbow, and it's different than the big Scottish bagpipe that you see at
the Irish leave the mouth free for doing better things.
That's like right.
Drinking and cussing.
Absolutely. Drinking and cussing, and and so we're going to hear something here on Local Folk.
Let's see if I'm in tune.
All right.
Here a couple of reels.
Okay. What were those called? Let me guess what those were called.
Okay.
No, I can't guess. You can never guess with tunes. What
you
are
can
these
make up names.
Called?
That's always fun. Yeah. Those are two great old mighty pipe tunes, pipe reels. First one's called The Old Bush, and the second one's called Jenny's Wedding.
Jenny's Wedding. Okay.
Just about every piper has their versions of those tunes. They're just mighty pipe tunes.
And do they usually go together?
A lot of times they do, yeah.
And because I don't recall having heard like our fiddle player do those tunes. Is it normally a pipe? It's normally a pipe thing.
Yeah, both those are pretty common. Everybody plays them, especially the first one. I'm sure he knows the Old Bush.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I bet you he does anyway. I mean, that's a really common one. The second one, a little bit less so, but it's pretty. They're both pretty common. If they're pipe tunes, there's a whole category of tunes that are, you know, my opinion is tunes that were written on the pipes. They're well suited to the pipes, and there was a time in Irish music where the pipes kind of dominated, and there's a body of tunes that are all fit that category, you know. But where they came from, who really knows?
I was going to say, what time did they dominate?
Good question.
I don't need to know.
The pipes came in sometime in the middle of the 1700s, the middle of the 18th century, and probably from around then till maybe around the middle of the 19th century, pipes were really, you know, the harp was.
That's hundreds of years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Well, yeah, at least for 100 years or so. You know, the harp was really number one for a long time.
Yeah.
And the pipes evolved over time until the point where they call them, you know, Ilion pipes now. But that's when they got pretty popular and were really one of the main things. There used to be a time where pipers in Ireland could travel around from wealthy landlord to the wealthy landlord to estate to estate, you know, and get put up for free and kind of get some money here and there and just write a tune for their patron once in a while. I personally think we should go back to that model any day now.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. You should just be able to waltz through the fancier neighborhoods around here and knock on doors and be like, what's your name?
I'll write a tune for you.
I'll write a tune
if I can stay for a few months and use your cable TV.
I'll write a part of it every single day.
Exactly.
That's what I think. Yeah, see, that would be okay. That's the way to go. So, here's a good question. Do you think that is there anything for pipe and harp?
Sure, yeah. There's actually seems to be a habit of a lot of great pipers that marry harpists.
Is that right?
I know of a few anyway. Joe McKenna and his recently late wife, Antoinette. Great duo, and they've recorded some things together on pipes and harp. And Benedict Kohler in Vermont and his wife Hillary Farrington, great pipe and harp duo. They do a lot of harpists will tend to do a lot of stuff in the O'Carolan kind of category, which is a little more classically sounding. And the pipes are well suited for a lot of that stuff. So that kind of thing where you do a little harmony, a little counterpoint together, sounds really good with pipes and harp.
Huh. I'd like to hear that.
It's there's not a lot of it out there that's recorded, honestly, but it
sounds bizarre.
It does work pretty well, yeah.
I threw it out there. Like, I mean, I thought if those are the two big things, then maybe it's like two great tastes that taste great together. I mean, who knows? I've never heard it.
We had a harpist at our session yesterday at Brian Baruz, so you know, it all works out in the end. We welcome all kinds.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I used to play, you know, in a band that had a harp player, no pipe player though. But you know, with Bruce McIntyre and Toad in the Road, and it was Mary and Bob Paul, and it was you know, I love the harp, and we did a lot of O'Carolan. In fact,
do you do
O'Carolan on the pipe sometimes?
I only know a couple. I'm not a you know. I like it. It's just it takes a lot of time to learn them, and I'd rather learn six reels in that time. I guess that's the kind of the standard these days. But
six reels?
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's playing reels and jigs and
slides
and polkas and hornpipes and things. So the Carolan, it just takes a little more time to get it down, I think. And I learned the ones I really liked, and I have a few queued up. I know I'm going to learn sooner or later. But
cool. Yeah. No, I can dig it. Hey, we should talk. Question for you. Before you played the pipes, though, you played the banjo.
Right, five-string banjo.
And you were five-string banjo, right. And you were playing Scruggs style. You were playing bluegrass anyways.
Yeah,
right?
Bluegrass was really one of my first loves when I was a little kid.
When you were a little kid. Yeah. So you loved traditional music from the time that you were a little kid.
Yeah, I think so.
Music, and especially traditional music.
It was a little strange. I liked doo-wop. I liked 50s acapella doo-wop.
Mm-hmm.
And like bands like the Coasters and the Drifters and the Del Vikings and those.
Okay,
so I used to order all the K-Tel records. That was my first thing.
K-Tel. First record was a K-Tel record. It was called Wings of Sound.
That's awesome stuff. I mean, you can't get those collections anymore. They're just fantastic. So that was my thing. And all my friends were into kind of the Stones and, you know, the Doors and stuff. But that was, I was just off on a little tangent there. I was always a little strange like that. And then my brother had all these Flatt and Scruggs records. And I used to watch the show, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah.
They were on all the time. And we went to a bluegrass festival all around the time I was about 10 or 11. And I just got blown away by all the fiddling and the music, and I was hooked on it. I used to listen to Flatt and Scruggs when I was younger than that, like 8 or 9 with my brother, and I really liked it. And when I came home from the festival, I decided I wanted to learn how to play. I was 12, or just about 12, and I wanted to play the fiddle, but every fiddle teacher I talked to said, well, you have to start with classical music. You have to start.
And really?
I know now that they're probably right. What they meant was that they're going to show me scales, and they're going to teach me, you know, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and things like that, which I realized. But I said, no, I just want to learn the bluegrass style. That's all I want to play. And I know that, you know, Curly Ray Wise sitting on the stump at the Bluegrass Festival was not ever playing classical music when he learned. So
yeah.
I was, you know, of course I knew better because I was 12 years old. So I decided if I didn't want to do that on the fiddle, so I just played the banjo so that all I could learn was bluegrass because you really can't play anything else on the banjo. So that's how that decision came about. And I love the banjo as well. I was lucky enough later on to have some lessons with Tony Trischka, one of the leading banjo players in the country.
Wow.
I didn't live up to it, but it was great to sit in a room with him for a while. And then I've let that go the last 15, 16 years of piping.
Well, you converted.
Yeah. I think a banjo leads to harder stuff is what I like to say.
The banjo leads to harder stuff. Really? All right.
I still love bluegrass, and I still play my banjo, but this is kind of a it's a harsh mistress, the pipes. You really have to keep on top of it.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. And the pipes that you're playing right now, are those the ones that they gave you?
No. This is a different set entirely. This is actually a set pitched in the key of C.
Okay.
So it's what we call a flat pitch set. It's a whole step lower than the usual set that you would play for in a session, say. So this is what the old guys played before they were worried about being up to concert pitch to play with other musicians. And it's a lot quieter. It's a lot sweeter. It's actually easier to play. You can do a lot of kind of the pippity-poppity stuff that doesn't come out good on the other channel. So it's my favorite right now. But I got this later on. The set they gave me, I do not have any remnants left. I still have the chanter, which my student right now, I think, has my chanter at home. And he's working on that one because his is
what's the chanter? Which part is that?
The chanter's the part that you play with your fingers so you get the melody from.
Okay. And so yeah, that's all that you have left in your student. Oh, you teach?
Yeah, I teach whenever I have somebody interested, yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to teach
more.
What do
they have to do? They have to get themselves a set of these things first?
That's the hard part.
That is the hard part.
A lot of people would want to play, but the hard part is to get a set, to practice set even. You're probably going to wait a year or 2 years most places. There's actually a great pipe maker in Maine right now, right? And Kenny Bunk, who has sets available, by the way. His name is Bruce Childress.
Yeah.
BCPipes.com. BC Pipes. It's Bruce Childress. And he makes really lovely sets. And I think he's got some practice sets ready to go. Last I spoke to him. And it's great to have somebody so close that makes really nice pipes. So if anybody's interested, I know where you can get lessons. And
you can always
contact me through the Boghat website as well for lessons, which is boghat.com.
Yeah. Well, this is what we're going to talk about next, actually, a little bit is Boghat. Your band that you've been doing for a long time. I know I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but basically were working for this station. I mean, you were working for that record company, but then you wound up up here in Maine.
Yeah, long story involving a girl.
A girl.
not with the girl anymore, but...
That's okay.
I think she's still in Maine. And my friend was up here, like I said. My good friend Stephen Brown was from New Jersey, was up here playing music, and he's the one that started the Brian Boru session.
I see. Okay.
Originally with his friend Nicole, who's still around, playing a great flute player, and a guy named Ted Davis, who's a guitar player, now lives in Boston, and is a great flute player, actually, and a great guitarist. They started it and did it for a couple months, and then they went off to Ireland, actually. Nicole went off to study there for, I think, a semester or a year or something, and Ted went with her, and I had just moved to town, so I got the gig.
So you got the gig. There you go.
It was a couple months in, and I kind of got in there with my friend Steven, and we had different people come in over the years.
Now, you knew music. You knew the music. You'd been playing for only a few years at that time?
Yeah, I'd been playing about 3 years at that point, but had only played very few sessions.
Very few sessions, and probably not too many concerts or any of that.
No, just a couple things here and there. I played at a couple colleges that people asked me to, just because the instrument's kind of unusual. Yeah. You know, I was no great shakes by any means, but I could play a decent jig at that point, you know.
Yeah.
So I did a couple things. I played for some free stuff here and there, and never really thought about performing much at that point either.
But then when they said a session, you said, okay, I think I can do this.
I wanted to play sessions. I did. I always wanted to go, but in New York, the best sessions where I was from were in New York City, and there would be 25 or 30 people sitting around playing, and they were just fantastic players, all of them. So it would be kind of silly for me. I'd be better off. I always say you're better off going and watching and just absorbing it. I wish people would take that to heart a little more often sometimes, but it's great to sit there and watch great players play. You know, it's very informative. And in New Jersey, there really wasn't much going on. I found a session later on, right before I moved, but there's some stuff now, but back then there wasn't a whole lot going on for people to play.
Well, let me ask, your family was half Irish and half Italian. Was there like lots of Italian sessions or something? I mean, what was filling the void? Where was the...
No, New Jersey's just a big void. That's exactly the right way to say it. I mean, for music, it was pretty much cover bands and cover bands, and that was pretty much it. I mean, there was not a lot going on. There was pockets where people were playing, but it was a lot of stuff in the house, you know, and I didn't know them very well. I actually have a great CD here from Willie Kelly and Mike Rafferty.
Oh, should we play a little bit of something like that?
Sure, that'd be great. These guys are... There's no pipes on here, which is unfortunate, but...
That's okay. What are these guys...
Just put on the first track, I'd say. It's got to
pop it right on. Tell me about these guys, Willie Kelly and Mike Rafferty.
Yeah, Willie Kelly is from, I think, Parsippany, New Jersey. If not, I have that wrong, it's something with a P. But it's not too far away from where I was from. And his wife, Siobhan, is a lovely flute player, and I think he has about 17 kids. Like, for real, I think he has five or six kids, I don't know what he does for a day job, but I'm sure it keeps him very busy. He's really one of the loveliest fiddle players I've ever heard in Irish music, and he's not very well known. And his partner on this record is Mike Rafferty, who is an East Galway flute player. He was good friends with Jack Cohen. Friends, you know, and also, you know, verbal enemies. They used to tease the crap out of each other all the time. It was very funny to watch. But Mike's a great old-style, East Galway-style flute player. He's been living in New Jersey for a long time. Both of them actually play pipes, but not on this record.
Not on this record. Let's listen to this for a few minutes. And this is not The Void. This is
the good stuff from Jersey.
This is the good stuff from Jersey, which is...
I may not have left if I knew this was going on at the time.
Oh, so very rare. Hey, right here on Local Folk. We'll be back in just a minute. And I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and I'm here with Tom Rota here on Local Folk. Tuned in to 106.1 WSCA. This is Local Folk. I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and my guest today is Tom Rota, and he was just sharing something with us, and that was great Irish music that came from New Jersey. He came from New Jersey, and he followed a woman, of all things, up here to Maine, and he had been playing the Illan pipes. He went from the banjo to the Illan pipes. It's just that's an amazing thing to me. Because they're just such distinct instruments. So you played a little bit of guitar, though, just a tiny bit, but you were like, this is, everyone plays guitar. Is that what happened?
Well, I started on the banjo.
On the banjo. Okay.
When I was just about 12, I started taking lessons, and then I got a guitar probably for Christmas, I think. I was probably 16.
Yeah.
And I started playing that because I was really into the Dead, and at that point, I had switched over. I wasn't always that weird, so... By the time it was getting a little outdated, I got really into classic rock. So it was still 20 years old anyway. But so in college, I was a rock guitarist. I had a rock band all through college and was the lead guitar player. Really pretty poor, but I had I had so much fun. Great band named Crystal Toast. We had a ball. We had the most fun ever of any college band. And then when I got back and went back to Jersey after college, If I had a rock band, I might still be doing that. But I basically just picked up the banjo again.
Yeah.
I hadn't touched it much in a couple of years, and I found out that Tony Trischke was up the road teaching for me. So that's when I got really serious about it, when I was about 21, and I started taking some lessons with Tony. You know, I played pretty seriously for a few years. I was in a really, really, I like to say it's the world's worst bluegrass band ever in New Jersey, a band called Crash Landing. It's terrible. But that's where I met this guy, Steven, who he came to see us play because he thought we were a Jimi Hendrix cover band because Landing is a Jimi Hendrix tune, right? Lo and behold, we were a terrible bluegrass band. And he was a really good bluegrass musician at that point, but also interested in Irish music. So me and him hit it off at that show, and we've been friends ever since. He lives up in Belfast now and makes Belfast, Maine, makes fiddles and bouzoukis and guitars and stuff.
Oh, really?
Those repairs up there, yeah.
Well, you want to tell us his website, too? Do you even know it?
I don't know if he has a website working, but you can get him at acousticnorth@gmail.com.
Oh, there
and
you
he's
go.
He's highly recommended for any kind of high-end repair work for your fiddle or your instrument. Don't send him, like, you know, something to change the string. Send him something that's hard. But he also is making really lovely, really original bouzoukis right now, different design.
Nice.
And he's made two or three of them already, and I think he's going to have some available for sale soon. So
I know several bouzouki players. They might. I'm sure they probably know. Would think they know about him, but if they didn't, they've found out now.
He keeps himself pretty well hidden.
Do you know how to play any dead songs on your pipes?
No, not really.
Have you even tried?
We for a wedding we did once. We had there's a Grateful Dead tune called "They Love Each Other."
They love each other.
Which is a really pretty tune, and this couple really wanted to walk down the aisle to this dead tune. They were both deadheads and also loved Irish music. So they asked us if we could figure it out, and we did. I used to have that on the phone, too. I could have played that, but we figured out a little instrumental break for this They Love Each Other tune. It sounded really cool. It was really nice. They actually, we played it for them, and the bride wept.
No kidding.
Visibly, she was so
so
psyched about it. So that was the only crossover with the dead I ever had.
That's what I like to make.
Other than that, I keep them for listening.
Hey, I have your phone here, as you have mentioned, and I have something. You've been involved in a band called Boghat, a very popular band, for quite some time. How long now?
It's the 10th year, starting the 10th year, yeah.
Year of Boghat, and who are the other members?
Mike Janot, who's from Dover, New Hampshire, right up the road, and plays with all these guys down here in Portsmouth. He's in a band called Mudhook, actually, as well.
Yep, absolutely.
That you've had on the show, I think, or at least members of. And he's been in there the whole time. Me and Mike kind of started it. And Chris Stevens, who we talked about earlier, who we'll talk about again, is with a band now called The Press Gang out of Portland. And he was the original third member, played accordion. And over the years, we've had different people in and out, a young fiddle player named Jamie Eller, who joined a band, I think, 7 or 8 years now, though the website still doesn't show her on the first page, which she is doesn't let me forget about. But it's just a matter of I have no idea how to alter my website. So, but Jamie now is the fiddle player, and she's the third person. It's myself on pipes, Jamie on fiddle, and Mike on bouzouki is the main band. And then we play with different people here and there.
And so I'm going to share with the world.
Yeah, first time ever.
The first time ever, and which often happens here on Local Folk. What am I sharing?
Well, Boghat's been trying to make a CD for, we've been together for 10 years. We're trying to make a CD for about 7 years. And by hook or crook, we haven't managed to, mostly out of laziness and lack of willpower. But also, we tried to record a couple times, and the pipes were just cranky and things like that. So this is one of the things we've come up with. We had some nice people help us out. Actually, Dave Hollowell, who you might have on the show soon from Mudhook, has a great home studio and did some of this stuff at home. And we kind of mixed it quickly just to see what it would sound like. And this is one of the ones that I'm not terribly ashamed of.
Okay. Yeah, let's listen to this. Yeah, let's give this a listen. Cool. Let's see. Let's make sure I have everything. Yeah, there we go. All right, we'll be right back.
One of our patented weird intros.
Okay, cool. We'll be right back. this playing in the background a little bit here. It's super sweet stuff, but there's 6 minutes of it, and we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we're kind of known for playing very long sets, A, and B, too fast.
So Boghat is known for playing long sets too fast.
Yeah, pretty much. We like to play pretty lively, I would say. Sometimes too fast, but usually just pretty lively. And we liked our, you know, we like our long sets. We like to do a lot of jig and the reel kind of stuff and just different types of arrangements here and there. Nothing too fancy, but nice stuff. And we just, every year we pick new tunes and whatever we've been playing that year. And around St. Patrick's Day, we get together and throw together some new sets.
Do you mix them up? Do you come up with, do you take tunes out of sets and add them into new sets and put them all together?
Sometimes
like
we use old tunes, and mostly we try and just whatever tunes we've all learned during the year, we just try and make new sets out of.
Yeah.
And sometimes an old tune might just fit perfectly right in there, so we throw it in. But all told, we have pages and pages of all sets written down. We could probably play for 7 or 8 hours without stopping, without repeating a tune at this point. So,
depending on your speed.
Yeah, depending on the speed, exactly. How many times through each one. It comes in handy, though, when you're doing the long gigs. All the Irish gigs have to be 3 hours long. You can't just play for 45 minutes.
It doesn't seem like
you're always playing out. Either whether it's a wedding or a bar gig or whatever, you always tend to be playing for 3 hours. So if you have a big, healthy list of tunes to choose from, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
We could you could find us at www.boghat.com, which I mentioned a couple times. It's extremely outdated, but all the contact stuff still works. And we'd love to play weddings and private parties.
This. I see your picture here. There's no gray.
There's no gray. Yeah, I know. I know, yeah. quite a change, especially in the beard since then. But one of the reasons we're not updating the website anytime soon.
You've been immortalized on your website. You may change, but your portrait never does, or whatever. It's like the Dorian Gray, but the opposite.
Right. we play every year at St. Patrick's Day. We play the Inn at Peaks on Peaks Island, right off the coast of Portland.
Yeah, I'm DJing a gig up in Peaks Island this year. Yeah, probably at the Inn.
Yeah, well,
I mean, how many places are there?
There's a couple wedding facilities there. We played all of them at this point, but so it depends on where they're getting married, I guess. But there's a couple VFW kind of places, American Legion. The Inn at Peaks is the Shipyard Run pub. The Shipyard Company owns it. And I think it's going to be the 7th year we played St. Patrick's Day there. And it's really cool because it's not the green beer and kind of vomit crowd.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Say Portland. So we've played all those places before. And we've played at Rira and Bolfini's and things like that. It's just a roar of people. And you can't hear what you're doing if you're trying to play acoustic music. It's not like we want them to sit down and listen, but we can't even hear ourselves playing. So it's a nightmare. This is a nice, semi-quiet gig with some really rowdy Islanders, and a lot of guests come and stay the night at the Inn. It's a nice time, and we're looking forward to going back. It's a Sunday this year, so I think it's going to be a little earlier. And we always play once a year at the Blue gig that we talked about. I play once a year there. Well, I do a couple on my own, but I do one with the band, and I give myself the choice spot, you know, right before.
Hey, there you go.
Right before or right after St. Pat's, you know.
Yeah. Hey, we talked about it, but we haven't really talked about this. There's sort of different levels of gigs that sort of happen. One of them would be a session, like an open session, where just about anybody could show up and put in, you know, what they want.
Right.
I don't know. Is Brian Brew an open session?
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah,
okay.
We like to consider Brian Brew a very welcoming open session.
Welcoming open session. So if you have something that you care to contribute, go to Brian Brew's on Sunday, right?
Yeah, it's Irish music.
songs and tunes?
It's mostly tunes.
Mostly
but
tunes.
But we don't mind a song once in a while.
A song every once in a while. Okay. It's mostly a tune session. Okay.
Yeah.
So then the next step would be like Blue in Portland.
Right.
Okay. Now tell me about Blue. What is that place exactly, and what is your relationship with it, real quick?
Blue, it's we call it Irish Night at Blue, very originally, and I started it about. It's going to be 7 years every Wednesday, set for 7 years at the beginning of February. Or actually, we're gonna make it the last Wednesday in January this time around. Will be the 7th birthday party, and what we do is have a concert first. It's supposed to be 7:30. Usually starts sometime before 8 Irish time, and then it goes for about an hour or an hour and a half with different people every time. Sometimes local, sometimes people from Boston, people traveling through, and occasionally big Irish names that we sell tickets for. Great players have been through there. Afterwards, usually hopefully 9 or 9:30, we break down and have a session with whoever's around in the room and just play for the rest of the night.
Okay, so it's sort of like you can be inspired by the concert, and then you're all jazzed up and ready to go for the session after.
And we have a core group of players that come most weeks, you know. it's changed a lot over the years there. There's been different players that have come to the sessions and played the concert parts. But for a long time, it's been a pretty steady group and five or six of us that play most weeks. And it's great because we have a different band every week that'll come, and hopefully they stay after their show and join us and play a few tunes with us. So you get some new tunes thrown in there and some new fun here and there.
Okay.
And some of the my favorite part of it is the concert part, where we get people, either great players that we never get a chance to see because they might be from Boston or someplace else, or people that have been playing with us but have never done a show, and just watch them get up on stage the first time and kind of go through a set and or pick some people to play with and work it out.
Runs the gamut then.
Yeah.
It's like my show where I have like,
exactly,
you know,
just
trying it's all over the place.
Trying to get the music out there to people and trying to encourage people that only play in sessions to maybe, you know, just get together with somebody, put together a few sets. You don't have to do heavy arrangements, but just to, you know, refine it a little bit. So I think it's a big step to go from just sitting in the session, kind of you can't hear yourself, you can't tell what's going on, you know,
scare the
you're just kind
of
playing
of
along, yeah, to actually get up and take it seriously. So that was the whole purpose of the thing, and it's morphed into a little more than that. We've had such a high level of people coming through that a lot of the beginners don't like to do shows there. I encourage them all the time, but you know, we've had some amazing players on that stage, so it's going back and forth. But I started doing ticketed shows about a year into it. We started with Tommy Peoples, the Donegal fiddler, and we've had so many big names, Kevin Burke, Neve Parsons, Mick O'Brien and Quiveen O'Rahilly, Jackie Daly and Matt Kranich. I'm missing a whole ton of them, but just some of the best Irish players around that are traveling around. Oh, Kevin Crawford and Killian Valley from the band Lunasa, which is really one of the biggest Irish bands around right now. They were coming and doing an annual show every once in a while. We had Killian back in the fall with his brother Niall, who's arguably the best concertina player ever to walk the face of the earth. Crazy stuff. And this little tiny stage is about, you know, 5 feet wide, 3 inches off the ground, and maybe 40 people sell the place out, which we sell out almost every one of these through the mailing list that I have. It's just amazing music, like stuff you just wouldn't, you know, you just don't hear this stuff unless you go out and find it.
Yeah.
And I have a good crowd on my mailing list, so I'm able to sell it out without any work. I don't have
That's
to go
beautiful.
Market. I don't take anything. I just give everything we make right to the artist. The bar is very nice. They do this just for the extra business for the night, and they do all the Wednesday nights the same way. You know, we do pass the hat for all the other bands.
Yeah.
And it's usually pretty reliable. We can get a few bucks for a traveling band or even a local band, and the bar does well enough. So far it's pretty good.
So that really rocks. You've got 40 seats, and they fill up, and
right.
Sometimes they pay, you know, a few bucks or whatever it is. And I mean, they always chip. They're always somebody's. Hey, chip
we're always
in,
passing
pass
the hat,
the hat.
But the ticketed shows for the big name artists are usually 20 or 25 bucks.
20 or,
you know,
25
or there's standing room options
That's
that are cheaper.
It,
yeah, and it's, you know, for 20 bucks, you're going to be 10 feet away from, you know, one of your Irish heroes, you
which
know,
is the way it should be.
Closed
though.
Into like a little tiny cave with them for the night, you know. And we've had some just really truly amazing shows in there.
Now, but what do you do though? Because the session that happens after that, honestly,
it's
like,
always a whether it happens session. Or not is always a question, because people get really blown away by the show and everybody's too chicken to play.
Oh, is that right?
Sometimes it takes 10 seconds and everybody's so amped up and jazzed that they just grab the instruments and start playing. And sometimes the people who played that night would be really willing to sit in.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're tired and they just played a concert, so they want to kind of chill out for a while and watch. You know,
but I mean, if somebody in the audience brought their spoons and they're like, I've always wanted to try this.
Yeah, we might shut that down pretty quick. You know, we have a lot of good players.
Right.
There's a lot of good players in Portland for Irish music and in Portsmouth as well. But we like to be welcoming at the sessions, but that doesn't mean we play slow. You
right.
know, we're still going to play as good as we can, as you know,
okay.
as fast as we want to.
Yeah.
And you know, spoons, you know, might be one thing I'd have to shut
well,
it
I
down.
I don't know. You know, I'm just. Okay. But I guess I guess my point is it a closed session? Is it invite only, or is it sort of like you know, hey, if you feel like you can, then go for it, and we'll let you know otherwise.
It's definitely open.
Yeah.
And if you come with your spoons, you know, you're going to feel the glances, and you'll
the
probably
glances.
Get the picture. You know.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're a really good spoons player, it might be different, but I've yet to meet one.
That's okay. I appreciate you. I appreciate you talking about something like that, because not everybody seems to feel that glance sometimes when it happens. I mean, you go to a session. I'm not talking about people that play the spoons. I don't have anything against
somebody
that, like,
me neither.
Per se, most. You know, the spoons or anything else like that. But, you know, hey, what about that? How do you tell somebody if they just probably shouldn't? Did you say, stop?
Or? It's a really hard thing. For running sessions at Brews for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
At Blue for the last 7 years, you know, and being kind of the primary guy, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
Because at one hand, you don't want to turn off your good players by having people that are just kind of obnoxious there.
Yeah.
And you don't want to turn away anybody. You know, you want to give everybody a chance.
Yeah, so, unless they have their kazoo.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, most people get it, at least after a little while. So we're Irish musicians. We're not hardcore. We generally sit and let it happen and then roll our eyes a little bit, and hopefully you get the hint. And if it gets to the point where it's just killing us, we're going to say something to you. But it's pretty rare when it gets to that point. Usually people figure it out. At Beruze, it's great. We have such a good core group. We just play really fast. And then people get lost.
And they're like, oh, I can't keep up. I better just have another drink.
Right. So they get overwhelmed and they put their we get a lot of rock guitar players showing up because they think they want to sit in. They're great rock guitar players, but they really have no idea what to do.
It's a totally different thing.
They don't come back often, you know. Then we get somebody who's just really, really bad and really annoying. Every once in a while, we got to talk to them and say, hey, maybe you got to practice next week instead of coming to the session.
But so even if it's open, it's not, it's open the first time. All right.
There's the difference between a beginner session and an open session, you know. Yeah. Open session,
There is a beginning session somewhere, too, isn't there?
Right.
Where you are? Where is
Chris
that?
Stevens started one in Portland just recently, last year. Him and myself, but it's mostly him. There's a website for it called PortlandIrishMusic.com, and it's great. Chris built it himself. It has all the tunes that we've done so far. You can look at the notation, and you can listen to him playing it. A couple of them are me playing. And then we get together at Acoustic Artisans, which is John Cooper's fiddle shop in Portland. He's very well known, great fiddle maker, and he does all these community events in his shop. He's a great guy. He lets us do this. Supposed to be first and third Mondays of every month. It's been something like that, with a couple cancels here and there. And we had a nice group of like 20 or so people that have been coming on and off and teaching a bunch of tunes. We go through it note by note really slowly.
So if you're glaring at somebody at Brian Brew, it's not because you hate them.
No, not at all.
Because you're trying to tell them telepathically, go to the slow session.
Yes.
Go to the slow session, and I will help you because I probably will be there, and so Chris will be there too.
If anything, we have a lot of empathy for these people, but
because you had to start somehow.
Yeah, and we all still blow it at the session once in a while. You know, you start a tune and it leaves your mind at the same moment, or hit the wrong note altogether, and that's not a big deal. But you also don't want to bring down. Yeah. The beauty, when you have seven or eight people that can really play pretty well all together, it's a really great thing. Yeah. And one person kind of playing really bad, especially like guitar or baron or something like that, it's loud and rhythmic, you can really just bring it down. Yeah. So we got to draw the line sometimes, but it's a really tough thing to call. And mostly we just kind of.
Well, that's why you're a leader. That's why you're a leader. That's
right.
What I would
say.
You got to make the big. Yeah, right. Hundreds. Hundreds
tens,
to be made in
tens of dollars.
Yeah, really. That's how I feel sometimes. Hey, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to play a tune of yours to leave and transition into Under the Radar, which is coming up next. But I do want to make sure that we mention one other thing, and that is that once you get beyond the sessions, you do the booking for quite a large venue as well.
Right. I book for a place called One Longfellow Square right in downtown Portland. It's a 200-seat music venue. We've had great acts there it's been 5.5 years now. And I started it. I was running it for a while, like I said, and eventually got into just doing the part-time booking there. But it's really kind of the alternative venue for Portland. It's not the new rock bands or the indie, circuit or anything, but we do a lot of bluegrass. We do a lot of all types of string music, a bunch of Irish music. We do a bunch of world music and whatever else we can get our hands on. Great folk, a lot of singer-songwriters and things like that. But it's a great acoustic hall. We do some electric stuff there as well, but it's a lovely room, great sound, and really intimate. Has a nice full bar, and good cookies at the desk.
It's
a comfy place to go see a show. So that's been a great outlet for me to listen to tons of different stuff and go see tons of live music, which is the best thing ever.
It is the best thing. Listen, you got to go out there and listen to live music.
Support your venues.
That's right. Support your venues and support them here in Portsmouth. And hey, take a trip up to Portland. I've had with me Tom Rota, Axis Mundi, I will say, of Irish music in Portland. This is what I'm calling you. This is my name for my label. So hey, Brian Beru on Sundays.
3-6.
Blue on Wednesdays.
Yeah, starting around 7:30.
Slow session twice a month,
a month, yeah.
Okay, One Longfellow Square.
Yeah, onelongfellowsquare.com. You can sign up on my mailing list if you want to know about traditional Irish stuff in this area at the Boghat website, which is just boghat.com. There's a sign up here kind of tab on there, and you go there, it goes right onto my mailing list, and you'll get a weekly newsletter telling you about my band. It's supposed to be for my band, but we do so little that it's mostly about Blue and about other events that are going on. So it's a good way to keep in touch with this type of music. And I want to say thank you very much for having me on, Steven. This is a great show. I love what you're doing here. This is a great – people should go back onto the website and listen to all the archive shows. You have a great wealth of stories and knowledge in there.
So. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. You can go to stephencarrigan.com/localfolk. But, we'll see you next week on Local Folk, but we're going to leave with – it's your choice. I have the Press Gang in one, and I have you, yourself, and another.
Oh,
why don't we go with whatever you like?
Why don't we play the Press Gang?
All right,
that's
Press
a better
Gang.
Album than mine.
What's your favorite?
I'll stick on the first track.
Hey, Mayor Harrison's Fedora and John Stenson's. Okay, we're going to do that, and we'll see you next week on Local Folk.